Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a combo mailbag Ravens preview edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. You're probably listening to this on Christmas Eve, if that's the case. Merry Christmas to everybody, a day early. Hope you have a great holiday season. Hope you're not too stressed out about things. Hopefully, Texans give us a reason, another reason to be happy this holiday season. Hopefully, you have many other non-football reasons to be happy. As we knock out a pre-Christmas Day edition of the podcast, I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays. You can listen on the radio, the Odyssey app, watch on YouTube, watch on Twitch. All of those things work, so we appreciate you supporting the station, supporting this podcast, the whole nine yards. We're going to do probably a truncated mailbag. I think I got about a half dozen questions or so today, and I'll do a quick six-pack preview of the Ravens game. And then for me, it's off to the Music Box Theater tonight. If you haven't been in the Music Box Theater yet here in Houston, do it. You will not be disappointed. I'm going to their Christmas show tonight, but they run shows year-round there. It's really, really good. Now, this is not a commercial or anything else. The cast, the two main members of the five-person cast there are big fans of the station and huge sports fans. Shout out to Luke and to Brad. But themusicboxtheater.com, look it up. I think you'll enjoy it. We've never had a bad time there. And they sell alcohol. Big selling point. All right, so a quick reminder to subscribe to the podcast. If you could, hit that subscribe button. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Appreciate that. And then the mailbag, we're going to do a mailbag today, but houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. Quick update, the only Texans-related news from today. Today, Monday, they're treating like you would treat, they're actually treating it like you normally treat a Wednesday. And a Thursday combined, they had D'Amico, Bobby Slowick, and CJ Stroud do media today. It's obviously a very, very shortened week. with the Saturday kickoff last week and the Wednesday kickoff this week. The big news is that we've got a little more clarity on Tank Dell's situation. The dislocated kneecap had already been reported. We can go ahead and add two other things to it. Torn ACL and, quote, other things, end quote. I don't know what the other things are, but if I'm reading between the lines, reading the tea leaves, I am not counting on Tank Dell being back to start season next year. I figure if I look at it that way and I internalize that over the next week, several weeks and months, that I'll just be a happier person if he does come back early, if he does come back, you know, during training camp or before the season starts, at least that would be great. My biggest question is, you know, we're not talking a broken leg for Tank, which he had obviously come back from, gunshot wound, which obviously he'd come back from, shot his leg. The poor guy, I can't think of anybody who's had worse leg luck last year and 3 weeks than Tank Dell. This one's a big one with multiple things happening with the knee. I just wonder, do we get the same old Tank back? He's going to get back on a football field, that we know, but I just wonder, you know, his game is so predicated on quick twitch and sudden movement, and none of these things are good for that. So that's my biggest concern. In the meantime, we got a season to finish out here. A regular season, two more games, and then a postseason, however long that goes for the Texans. And hopefully this Tank thing is a rallying point for them. I don't know that I like that it's such a quick turnaround after all this, but we'll see what happens on Wednesday. So with that said, we've got the Tank news. Let's get to some mailbag questions. Again, houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. And let's start with Anand, who is a new emailer to the podcast. Since our defense is stellar and our offense is mediocre at best, why can't CJ be a great game manager with a strong running game for this year's playoffs? CJ's a great QB. He'll be a franchise quarterback for years to come. I believe our O-line and offensive coaching is the weak link, but CJ also has not played well in a few games this year. Detroit and the Titans, to name a couple of them. Let the defense take over and let CJ be a game manager and not turning the ball over. The strong running game is the hard part to negotiate on that, Anand, because they don't have a strong running game. Why can't CJ be a game manager with a strong running game? Because the Texans don't have a strong running game. They've got Joe Mixon putting a cape on from time to time, and that's about it. They don't have a running game you can consistently lean on to get 5 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, and grind out the clock in a game where you need to go into the four-minute drill. So that's why. I agree, like, 75% with what you're saying. Strong running game is the part that I put aside. But yeah, I think especially now without Tank, I mean, I don't know what the ceiling is for this offense. I don't know, protecting the football and taking advantage of short fields that the defense gives them and special teams gives them might be the ticket. Well, let me back up. That will be the ticket. They're going to make a deep playoff run. They're not making a deep playoff run by getting into shootouts with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, or Patrick Mahomes, as we saw on Saturday. So I think you're leaning on the defense and kind of CJ decisions. That is going to be a ticket. I think it tops out a long divisional round, but I'm wrong. Joe Q has a really long email. Week before, I emailed my opinion, the Texans should rest a large number of starters for the short rest game versus the Ravens. You seem somewhat intrigued by it. I subsequently listened to a segment on the radio during which Seth Payne dismissed the idea with contempt. Let's set aside for a second roster size is the only real O-line candidate to sit against the Ravens is Laremy Tunsil. I'm confident Seth wants Tunsil to play due to the softness of Laramie's run blocking. Yes, that would be the case. Two questions. In what ways is Seth's view of this question different from going to a blackjack table and hitting all of your 18s and 19s? Like, playing starters versus the Ravens on Christmas has a huge downside, no upside, but does offer the potential to demonstrate toughness to those around you and to yourself. If Seth were here, I'd just hand the mic to him. I'm not wild about a question where I'm just talking about Seth's opinion on something. No disrespect to Seth. It's just, he's another person. But anyways, I would say, and this is something Seth has said, at least on the offensive side of the ball, they need the work. They got to get better. They need reps. They got to play football. They're not good. So that's what I think Seth would say, because I've heard him say it.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. ski down snow-covered slopes, and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
We know more often than not the Texans emerge from a game with at least one man down for the next game. We do seem to have come out of Miami unscathed. Oh wow, this was written. Okay, wow, this was written before the Kansas City game. So before they lost Tank Dell and Shaq Mason and Jimmy Ward. So let's play a game of Joe Q, your question is, honestly, it's just like it's a little long and it's a little complex for me today in particular. Maybe you're catching me on a day where I've just been driving around doing too much shopping. All the blackjack analogies in the four paragraphs. I would ask everybody, and I've said this before, try to keep your emails short if you can, okay? Try to keep the emails shorter. If everybody had really emails, I would spend 2 hours reading emails, so try to keep them tight. I don't pretend to understand play calling, but damn, the frequency the Texans run wide receiver screen is annoying. At this point, it's pretty obvious defenses have them figured out. Loic's dedication to such a flop of a play is really disheartening. It only works if it catches the defense off guard. It cannot be a staple of the offense. Ben in the South. The wide receiver screens were a real hindrance in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't know if it's catching defenses off guard. I mean, if they're trying to catch them off guard, I don't know. These other defenses seem to know it's coming every time. I think the biggest problem for the Texans is just these guys, especially the offensive linemen in space, don't look like they know what the hell they're doing. I saw a podcast with Robert Mays, formerly The Ringer, now The Athletic, that talked about how wide receiver screens are basically the thing that's the tell as to whether or not you have a well-coached offense. If your offense is well-coached, how guys execute their assignments on a screen. If that's the case, then Bobby Slowick is the worst offensive coordinator in football because they're horrible on screens. They ran four screens against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they gained -9 yards. Can I say gained -9 yards? Does that even make sense? Do you gain negative yards? And it left them in 3rd and 10, 3rd and 13, and 3rd and 9. So you ran a couple of times that almost voluntarily either puts you in or leaves you in horrible down and distance situations. Yeah, that's the screens ain't working. Chris in KC, huge Texans fan from Houston. I live in KC now. I was so pumped for this game. All the entitlement in this town is obnoxious, albeit valid. I mean, they just keep winning. I'm pointing the finger today at Dalton Schultz. This guy can't block anything, and you'd think he could at least catch, but no, he drops the ball all the time. Overall, I think the O-line did okay against Spag schemes. Obviously, you're going to lose on stunts, but for the most part, he did okay. Every time Schultz was supposed to block or jab, he fails, he misses, he whiffs. I'm over it. A, what happened? He seems complacent and just isn't leading it all on the field. Like Mixon, I want winners. Yeah, I don't know what happened with Dalton Schultz. Last year, the narrative on him was, well, he's not a good blocker, but he's a willing blocker. Now he just looks lazy a lot of the time or disinterested. I don't know what it is, and he looked that way running routes too in this game. How much dead money is involved in his contract? I would say probably too much to cut him after 1 year on a 3-year deal. He's guaranteed $23 million, so that's a little expensive. I don't think the team thinks as little as the fans do right now. Plus, CJ really likes him, and I think it probably matters. Chris goes on to ask, do we miss Brevin Jordan? What's the answer? Cade Stover. The problem at this stage of the season, you know, before I could say, well, you could trade for this guy or that guy or, you know, Cade Stover, what's the answer? Cade Stover needs to continue to improve. You got to hope Dalton Schultz wakes up, and they did sign Brevin Jordan for another year, so he will be back. But any question you guys have offensively right now, I think the answer is just it is what it is. Like, this is who they are. This is who it's going to be. Nothing's getting fixed at this point in the year. If Bobby Slowick was the genius we all thought he was last year, then he wouldn't still be throwing screens and running the same shit in week 16 that he was doing 12 weeks ago. I appreciate you listening, Chris. The other Ben is what I'm calling Ben. There's Ben in the South, and then there's the other Ben. Seeing CJ weep over Tank's injury to the point he had to put a towel over his head and be physically comforted by teammates concerned me a little. CJ was worthless the rest of the game. I get it. It was a gruesome injury, but that response was not comforting from the leader of the team. He has to be able to pull it together and operate. That response was more drastic than any I saw the week before when a guy almost died on the field. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would have liked to see more emotional stability in that situation. You're not alone, other Ben. I've heard this from a lot of people. I'm up at the studios right now, and I just heard Clint Sterner say it from across the hall from me. I heard him say it to me in the postgame show. I don't feel as strongly as others do about how CJ reacted in that situation. I think CJ's a unique guy in that there's very few quarterbacks that connect with his teammates the way CJ does. I think there's a lot of players that are as emotionally invested in the game and the sport in their teammates. I think CJ's connection with his teammates is probably a half a notch higher than your average 23-year-old. I think that needs to be pointed out, too. He's 23. He's not seen a ton of this on the football field. We can't discount that Tank is his best friend as well. So I think, at least initially, at least until CJ maybe gets hardened to some of this stuff, that you're gonna have to accept the fact that part of the reason why the culture is so good over there and guys want to play with CJ Stroud, and that the team, for a team that has so many ups and downs offensively, that there's not some mini mutiny in there. Those are all characteristics of CJ that probably in some way play themselves out the way they do when Tank went down with the injury. And I don't know, too, if there's any sort of like, if there's any level of guilt that CJ's the one that threw the football to him. Like, I just don't know. Like, I have no idea what goes through guys' heads in this situation. There's so many situations that are traumatic in life that you wouldn't think someone feels guilt over that they do. So I don't know how much of that was baked into it. Like, if this had happened to Tank on a punt return, not a ball that CJ threw, would he have reacted the same way? I don't know. I don't even know if CJ knows. But I understand the concern. And yet I also see CJ's side of it too. So this may be one. I don't have a strong, forceful take on this either way. I didn't play. I've not been in a locker room. I've not been in the military. You know, there's with football more than any other sport, there are militaristic aspects to it where, you know, if you're in the military, if you're a lieutenant and you get a guy go down in the middle of battle, you got to keep your head screwed on straight and just keep going. You got a war to go win. I know football is not war, but I think sometimes those analogies hold up. And CJ, in a perfect situation, the quarterback is the guy going over and comforting somebody else, not vice versa. So hopefully we don't have to experience what CJ's reaction would be on something like this again. Hopefully this is the last time we see an injury this bad on the field involving, you know, somebody that CJ's this tight with, or that, you know, that's so traumatic to the point where the guy gets taken off on a type of cart that I've never seen before. Looked like it was an actual ambulance he was being taken off in on the field, which is probably what it was. You know, as far as CJ being worthless, that's the part to me. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other about CJ's emotion in the moment. I understand both sides. My only concern was, yeah, he didn't play well the rest of the game. You know, they had three drives after that. They went two and out, or I'm sorry, they went three and out on two of them. And then on the one drive that they sustained that ended in a field goal, CJ had two delay of games, a sack where he ran out of bounds 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Like, he was just doing things that are uncharacteristic of him and characteristic of somebody whose mind isn't entirely there. So that part, That part to me would be the most concerning thing to me about CJ's reaction to all of it. Obviously, the major concern is Tank himself, but as far as we're just psychoanalyzing CJ here, so there's that. Neil in Liverpool, love hearing from Liverpool. First, I'm totally devastated by Tank's injury. How much bad luck can one guy have in a year? No kidding. I think it's now time to get Xavier Hutchinson more involved in the offense. I know he's a different type of receiver to Tank. He's shown signs of growth and made some clutch catches in important spots this year. With his size, I kind of think of him as baby Nico or Nico Collins light. Is it time to adjust the offense to focus on two big-bodied outside receivers? Still loving the show, man. I don't know that they're going to get that specific, that they're just, you know, they're going to tailor the playbook to the types of receivers they have. I don't know that Xavier Hutchinson is good enough to where you go, okay, here's how we're going to completely tweak everything. Now, the fact of the matter is they've just been running the same shit all year long. I don't know why they change anything now with fewer guys out there. So I just think Xavier Hutchins is just, he's going to be a bigger part of the offense. John Mechie's going to be a bigger part of the offense. I don't know that they're going outside of the building to find anybody to supplement this receiving core. And to be honest with you, I don't know that there's anybody who's any better than the guys they have in their receiver room. The avenues to go get some additions to the receiver room, the one that's most intriguing to me, because I don't think they're signing Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think Deontay Johnson's coming here. I'm not real super psyched about anybody they've got in the building right now on the practice squad. I'll be curious to see if there's a guy on somebody else's practice squad that they go pluck that they really liked or they scouted and they liked. That guy can't crack the rotation on that team. If you sign him, you got to put him on the 53. But I wonder if there's a guy or two out there that Nick and D'Amico may have liked during the draft process that are sitting on somebody else's practice squad. And now with Tank down, you would go grab that person, you know? So we'll see. Derwin and Cypress closes us out on the mailbag. Was Tank's injury a scheme screw up with him and Wayne in the same area and Wayne running the wrong route? I don't know. D'Amico didn't say. It sure did look very peculiar that two guys were that close to each other. And Jared Wayne, just from what I've heard, is inconsolable over all this, which sucks, but that's football. Derwin asks also, is Slowick holding D'Amico back like when Bob McNair had to step in and force Gary Kubiak to hire Wade Phillips? I don't know. I think it's a fair question. I think if the offense holds up this way, you know, does Cal take a page out of his dad's book and go to D'Amico and say, hey, look, now you got to know who's available. And I don't know who's out there yet that you would bring in that's the equivalent of a Wade Phillips. You know, Wade Phillips, longtime coach, head coach in Dallas. Elite defensive mind. I need to take a look at the list of guys available. I don't think that Cal would step. Well, I don't know that Cal would step in, period. I don't know that he's got that in him to force something on D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio. I just don't. And I think that's overall a good thing, by the way. Like now I would need to see the list before I would say he should do that of like who's out there and who's available. To the extent that the owner needs to step in, you know what I mean? Because I definitely don't think Cal's just going to step in and say, fire Bobby. That's not going to happen. I don't think. I think there'd need to be a solution in place. I don't know that that's going to happen anyways, but I think it's the dynamic, what you're saying about the dynamic, yeah. Like D'Amico, a defensive coach, might have a soft spot and a blind spot for a guy he brought in the same way Gary Kubiak did for Frank Bush. And Bob McNair needed to step in and say, no, you're going to hire Wade Phillips. Would Cal McNair do the same thing with D'Amico? I don't think so. But, boy, what a great storyline that would be, right? All right, so there's your mailbag, houmailbag@gmail.com. I'm going to give you guys a quick preview of the Ravens game. Then I'm going to get out of here with my prediction on the Ravens game. The pregame six-pack, can number one. This is an easy one. The whole Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson combo platter. This is just brutal. That Derrick Henry is still this good and that he's on this team is a big problem. I don't know how these guys have lost five games this year, if I'm being honest. I think that the Ravens A game, their A-plus game, I think the A-plus Ravens game is the best, the highest ceiling of any of the teams in the AFC. I think their best game is better than the Chiefs' best game, the Bills' best game, certainly the Texans' best game. Steelers, we saw them beat the Steelers. I know they've had trouble with the Steelers. They outclassed the Steelers on Sunday. I say outclassed them. It was a close game in the fourth quarter, and then the Ravens got a pick six and another touchdown, and they were laughing. But the Henry Lamar Jackson combo, I think they're just going to pound at the Texans all day long, especially I know they had short rest as well, but we know that the Texans, they won and didn't get all banged up like the Texans did. The Texans lost, got banged up. The only thing the Texans really have going for them is that it's the Ravens that have to come here. So the Texans at least get to spend Christmas Eve in their own beds. Number two, can life after Tank, what do they do at wide receiver? Because they're going to have to move the ball through the air at some point because they can't move the ball on the ground. The Ravens defense has not been great this year, but it's been good against the run. It's been better against the pass of late, but overall for this season, not great against the pass. I don't know that the Texans were equipped to hurt the Ravens even with Tank Dell. I certainly think without Tank Dell, it's going to be awfully tough pushing the ball down the field. The saving grace is that they're at home, and at least it's an environment that is going to be a friendly environment. I don't think a ton of Raven fans are going to travel on Christmas Day to come to Houston to watch them play the Texans. Number three, the Ravens tight ends. The Texans do not do a good job of covering tight ends. The Ravens have two very good tight ends in Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. So that's, you know, when Henry and Lamar Jackson aren't able to run it, or if they're able to run some play action, or if Lamar Jackson, things are breaking down, those two tight ends are very athletic and very talented, especially in the red zone. And the Texans have given up a ton of touchdown passes this year. The tight ends are a big problem in this game. Number four, Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton near the line of scrimmage. Kyle Hamilton playing center field. Kyle Hamilton everywhere. CJ has had trouble this year with interceptions. He's thrown 11 of them. He's had a few that have been throws downfield where he just hasn't seen a guy. So Kyle Hamilton, between everything he can do around the line of scrimmage to make life miserable for the Tech, and we know the Texans have trouble picking things up around the line of scrimmage. I can't imagine what a 6'4" safety is going to do to their brains on Wednesday. It's going to melt them. So Kyle Hamilton is number four. Number five, the kicking game. This may be actually something that's advantaged Texans, although Kyme Fairbairn has been shakier in the second half of the season than he was the first half of the season. Missed that PAT on Saturday against the Chiefs. Justin Tucker's been bad this year. He's a future Hall of Famer, but he's been bad this year. So maybe if this thing hangs close, laying in the balance within a field goal one way or the other, that might be advantage Texans. So the kicking game there as well. Final can. This is the quickest six-pack ever, but it's Christmas time, and I got to get to the Music Box Theater. My prediction, 31-17. Ravens. I just think it's too quick a turnaround for the Texans, a team that was that emotionally banged up after the Kansas City game, a team that is this physically banged up right now, down a bunch of guys in the wrong spots if you're going up against the Ravens. And missing Azeez Al-Shaair is a big one in this game, especially with Lamar Jackson out there. I think that this just feels like a game where the wind is out of the sails for the Texans to me. I hope I'm wrong. 31-17 Ravens. My prediction. All right. Again, a reminder, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. If you want to send me an email and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. So for Anthony Irwin, my producer, and all of you for getting this out to all of you and all of you for listening, very Merry Christmas to all of you. Next episode will be following the game against the Ravens. Hopefully a win. We'll see. But a very Merry Christmas to all of you, especially those of you who email the show. Really appreciate you guys and your support throughout the year and everybody who's sharing this podcast with friends and listening. Really, I'm enjoying doing it. Hopefully you're enjoying me doing it as well. So Merry Christmas. Enjoy. We'll see you guys later this week.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.